Jaya Radha Madhava, Jaya Kunda Bihari. Shriman is the Divine Grace, Lacey Bhaktivedanta Swamiraj, Srila Prabhupada Kijai, Gaur Premanande, all glorious to the sound devotees, all glorious to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Namon Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Prasthaya Buddhaya, Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swamitanamane, Namaste Saraswati Deve, Gauravani Pracharane, Nirvishesha Srinivadi Paskatya De Satarne. Oma Gyana Timurandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chatsur Unnoitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Uttapada Kamalam Shri Gurum Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Prajana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shiva Sakans Vitamscha Hey Krishna Karna Sindo Dinabando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchena Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Prishubhana Sudha Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakapa Dhruvyascha Kripa Sindhuvyevacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shadvaita Gadadhar Shivasati Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya You have to hit that a little. So thank you all for coming. I'm going to read from a book called the Bhagavad Gita, As It Is. This is chapter 15, which is entitled The Yoga of the Supreme Person. And this is text number 8. Shariram yadavapnoti yatschapyu kramati shraha krihi vaitani samyati vayuraganda ivashayat. The living entity in the material world carries his different conceptions of life from one body to another as the air carries aroma. Thus he takes one kind of body and again quits it to take another. Please repeat, the living entity in the material world carries his different conceptions of life, one body to another, as the air carries aromas. Thus he takes one kind of body and again quits it to take another. This is Srila Prabhupada's purport. Here the living entity is described as Ishvara, the controller of his own body. If he likes, he can change his body to a higher grade. And if he likes, he can move to a lower class. Minute independence is there. The change his body undergoes depends upon him. At the time of death, the consciousness he has created will carry him on to the next type of body. If he has made his consciousness like that of a cat or dog, he is sure to change to a cat's or dog's body. And if he has fixed his consciousness on godly qualities, he will change into the form of a demigod. And if he is in Krishna consciousness, he will be transferred to Krishna Loka in the spiritual world and will associate with Krishna. It is a false claim that after the annihilation of this body, everything is finished. The individual soul is transmigrating from one body to another, and his present body and present activities are the background of his next body. One gets a different body according to karma, and he has to quit this body in due course. It is stated here that the subtle body, which carries the conception of the next body, develops another body in the next life. This process of transmigrating from one body to another and struggling while in the body is called karshati, or a struggle for existence. So the text again. Shariram yadavapnoti yatschapdyukramati shraha krihit vaitani samyati vayur gandan ivashayat. The living entity in the material world carries his different conceptions of life from one body to another as the air carries aromas. Thus he takes one kind of body and again quits it to take another. Namo Vishnu Vraya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutaya Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasatun Deve Gauravani Vracharane Nirvishesha Srinivadi Paskadhyade Siddharane. So Bhagavad Gita has two divisions of knowledge. One division is knowledge about oneself, and the other division is knowledge about the Supreme Self. Here in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is explaining some knowledge about the self being the spiritual self, the conscious self. When we talk about spirit, we mean that there's something within the material body that makes the body appear to be alive. And that something happens to be our real self. That's who we actually are. That self is different from the temporary material body which we're in at the present moment. As a matter of fact, the body is so temporary that according to Bhagavad Gita, that at every moment the body is changing. It's not that the body changes only at the time of death, but every moment we're getting a new body. That's why our body looks different from the body we had when we were 5 years old or 10 years old or 15 years old. And whatever body we happen to have now won't last very long. It won't even last a moment. And because we're always getting new bodies. We generally don't notice it until there's a number of years that go on. And then we say, oh, you look so different. But actually, at every moment, we're different. The body is different. But the fact is that we ourselves are not different because we're different from the body. Sometimes people think that this philosophy is some kind of Hindu doctrine. One time Prabhupada was in one university in South Africa, and there was one Indian gentleman with him. They were both giving a talk on different subject matters, and Prabhupada mentioned that this is called reincarnation. Namely, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, the body is changing from boyhood to youth to old age, but the soul, who's wise, he doesn't become disturbed by all these changes because he doesn't change. But this Indian gentleman said, Swamiji, why do you keep on talking about this Hindu doctrine of reincarnation? So Prabhupada said, it's not a Hindu doctrine. Any more than 5,000 years ago, when Krishna was talking to Arjuna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, he didn't tell Arjuna, my dear Arjuna, fortunately we're on this battlefield and I'm going to talk to you about Hinduism because I happen to be a Hindu god. And you happen to be a Hindu also. So let's talk about Hindu philosophy. That according to Hindu philosophy, all Hindus have a temporary body. And their bodies keep on changing. Unfortunately for Hindus, they have to leave their bodies sometime. But the good thing about being a Hindu is that you get another body in your next lifetime. Self-realized Hindus don't become bewildered by all this. So no, it's not that Arjuna was a Hindu. There was no such thing as Hinduism 5,000 years ago. Nor is Krishna a Hindu god. Nor is this philosophy Hinduism. Not that Hindus have bodies that changes, that change, but fortunate Christians don't. Their bodies don't change. Or that only Hindus get a different body at the time of death. No, every living entity in this material world, whatever their belief or lack of belief, everyone has a body that's constantly changing. And at the same time, every living entity who's aware of the body, they themselves don't change when all these changes go on with the body. Of course, our experience is changing. Certainly, the experience we had as a 5-year-old is different from the experience we have now. Even our subtle body has changed. But the person who's having the experience is exactly the same. Therefore, the conclusion is, as the material nature grows and subtly, the subtle means the mind, intelligence, and the false ego, as that keeps on changing, and as we don't change, the only thing that changes along with the body is our experience. So, at the time of death, it's simply another change, and either we exist in our spiritual body, or we get another material body. So, here it explains the process by which we get another material body. It's according to the mentality that we developed at the time of death. Well, before the time of death. In other words, whatever mentality we're developing this lifetime will qualify us for another body in our next lifetime, either spiritual or material. So, of course, in this present society, as Prabhupada mentions at the end of the Bhagavad Gita, at this purport, everyone is struggling hard. And why are we struggling hard? Which is called karshati. Everyone is struggling hard, so somehow or another, they'll be able to survive in this body for as long as possible. Unfortunately, no one survives. Although we may prolong our attempt at survival, ultimately, we don't survive. But in the midst of that survival, we have a choice to do things which are considered to be in harmony with the laws of material nature, or we can do things which are out of harmony with the laws of material nature, or we can do things which are in harmony with the laws of spiritual nature. So we have our choice. Therefore, we're called here Ishvara, because we can determine which desire to fulfill. Better not to take so many pictures. Of course, those who have no spiritual knowledge, one of the choices is out. That is, if we have no knowledge about how to act appropriately as a spiritual being, then there is no option to act appropriately. That's why Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita, to give us that option. On the other hand, then there is the option of acting according to the laws of nature. Of course, if we don't know what the laws of nature are, then we'll have no idea how to act according to them. For instance, if we don't know that there's such a thing as dharma or religious activities, or if we don't believe in them, or we deny their existence, then the only choice we have left is to act adharmically, against the laws of material nature. For instance, we may think, I'm free to eat anything, to have sex in any way I want, to defend myself in any way I want. In other words, basically, we're free to satisfy whatever demands the senses have, and that's life, and that's how you live life, and that's the only purpose of life. We may think like that. Unfortunately, there are many living entities in the past who thought exactly like that, and now they no longer have the human form of life, but they're amongst us, as we can introduce to some of the cats we have here. We have one black one, We have one black and white one. We have one brown one. They also thought they were free to act any way they wanted. And indeed, they were free, according to the laws of nature, to become a cat in their next lifetime. Of course, these were very fortunate cats. They get prashadam. But I don't think any one of us would make that decision to become a cat, even if we could get prashadam. Because they also eat other things which are not offered. Unless you consider the rats around here and the birds offered to Krishna. But that was their choice. Similarly, it's not that everyone... Now, what is the proof that some human being who acted impiously in his last lifetime became a cat? So our proof is the fact that we have cats and dogs and trees and ants and butterflies who are also living entities like we are, that also have intelligence, they also have consciousness, they also have the same desires to eat and sleep and mate and defend exactly like we do, only they're in a different body, that's all. Now, I didn't put them there, and I doubt whether anyone here has put them there, but they're there. So how did they get there? How did we get here? The fact is that there is actually a personality who is controlling this material nature. And this material nature is putting different living entities in different bodies. It is not by accident that the sun is rising at a certain time and the sun is setting at a certain time. It's not by accident that we eat food. It's that it's digested. Parts of it are assimilated. Parts of the food are eliminated. There's a great controller behind the material nature, and that controller is putting different living entities in different bodies according to what choices they made. We all know that flowing through our minds all the time are different desires. And according to the desire we choose, that we desire to desire, then we find that that desire that we become fixed on, that we think about, we feel strongly about, and then we will to carry out with our senses, then the material nature carries out, under Krishna's direction, carries out that desire, and that's called activity. Someone may think, let me make $1 million by working hard. So that's a desire. And then they work hard, then the material nature arranges it that they work hard, and maybe, or maybe not, they get their reward. In any case, that desire to work hard and get some reward is a choice that the soul has made. Or the soul may make the choice, I'm not going to do anything. My endeavor in this lifetime is to sleep as much as possible. So that's also a choice. So then the material nature carries out that desire and then offers a nice place to sleep or not so nice place to sleep. And the living entity is sleeping, like Kumbhakarna. Or you may desire, let me do good to people, help little old ladies across the street, give charity to the poor, whatever. So that's also a desire that one may have. And the material nature fulfills that desire. And one may desire to get out of the material nature to realize the fact who we actually are. If we're eternal, we might as well spend some time finding out who we actually are. So that's also a desire to find out about the self, to find out about the Supreme Self. Now, if I want to sleep all the time, the human form of life is a rather poor alternative. If I've endeavored to sleep as much as possible, then in my next lifetime, the material nature will offer me the body of a bear. And in the body of a bear, I have much better opportunities for sleeping. I can sleep for 6 months, and no one will criticize me. There is no need for an alarm clock. Even if I sleep in an extra week or two, there's no problem. I'm given an extra blanket. My body itself is a nice blanket, and I curl up with my whole family, and we have a nice sleeping party for 6 months. And none of my family members will call me lazy. You lazy old bear, why don't you get a job? That is my job, sleeping. And if I want to make a lot of, if I want a lot of sense gratification, human form of life is very poor. If I want to eat unlimitedly, we can see that people try to eat unlimitedly, and then everyone criticizes them. Oh, you're getting fat, or this, or that. Why don't you go on a diet? We have to spend money. The food is very poor. We can't digest it or assimilate it. But if we get the body of a pig, there's no problem. We can eat unlimitedly and no one will call us fat. Of course, people may call us fat, but we don't understand what people say anyhow. We never heard of a pig going on a diet. Because even the fat lady pigs, they attract the male pig anyhow. There's no problem. And the pigs, they can have sex life unlimitedly. No one will call a pig promiscuous. So, human form of life is a very poor alternative for sense gratification. But the animal species of life are much greater opportunities for eating, sleeping, mating, defending. If you're born as an animal, then you don't have to go to school. If you're born as a human being, you got to start it all over again. 5 years old, you're back in school. 1 plus 1 is 2. 2 plus 3 is 5. All over again. Tests. And having to be in school. And then you grow up, and after school, then you have to go to college. And then it costs you $100,000, and then you spend the rest of your life paying off your debt to the university. And you're still only washing dishes, life after life. So human form of life is not a great opportunity for sense gratification, but it's a great opportunity for self-realization. Therefore, one has to first of all understand that we're not the body, that we're a spiritual being, and that there is a goal which is much higher than just making money and spending it for sense gratification. The goal of life is, as they have one bumper sticker, and actually it was on the back of many cars in Texas, it says, whoever gets the most toys at the end of life wins. So the aim of life is not to get the biggest house on the block, the newest car, the most wives or husbands. It's not the aim of life to simply try to display one's ability to be an illusion. The aim of life is self-realization. So here it says that our consciousness is compared to the air, just like air is pure. But when air passes through roses and it smells very sweet, air is neutral. But in association with roses, then it smells like roses. And we say it smells very pleasant. But that same air, when it's in contact with garbage, smells very unpleasant. Air is always the same, but in association either with roses or garbage, it takes on different qualities. Similarly, our consciousness originally is pure. But in contact with the material nature, it takes on different aspects. And therefore, we appear sometimes to be good, we appear sometimes to be bad, and usually we appear to be a mixture of both good and bad. But originally, everyone is pure, and if we purify our consciousness, and what does that purification mean? Purification from the tendency to think ourselves to be free to do whatever we want in the material world and believe that there is no higher sanction than my senses and mind for my activities. In other words, there is no higher authority in this universe than my senses and mind, and I follow them, either by force or by willingness, but somehow or another, my whole interest in life is somehow or another to follow whatever dictation that my mind and senses give me. But there is a higher authority, and that higher authority is that same person who is controlling the sun and all the other planets, who's in our heart, who's giving us remembrance and knowledge and forgetfulness. There is a higher authority, and if we consult with that higher authority, how we can be gradually become purified, first of all, from our misconception that we are this body. Because after all, it's rather, we may find it pleasant having our body right now, but we know it's not always so pleasant thinking ourselves to be a material body. And certainly as we grow older, it becomes less pleasant at the time of death. It's very unpleasant. Everything we work so hard for during this lifetime, suddenly we have to give it all up, and it doesn't matter who you are. It is not that a rich man, he dies very happily because he's rich. And a poor man dies very unhappily because he's poor. No, death is a great equalizer. The poor man, he doesn't lose very much at the time of death. And the rich man has a lot to give up. Therefore, he usually suffers even more. And the rich man, the poor man obviously has not much to take with him because he can't take anything with him. And the rich man can't take anything with him either. You can't write a check and say, well, can you deposit this with Yamaraj? So I can cash, you know, I can get paid back in my next lifetime. There's one story, of course it's just a joke, but one miserly person, he'd never give anything to anyone. But he heard that if he gave a donation to the church, he would actually be able to go to heaven. So he decided, well, it's worth a small donation. So he gave $5 to the church. And then he demanded a receipt. So the priest was surprised. He never gave a receipt to anyone, just for $5. But after so many demands, he finally wrote a receipt for $5. So now this miserly old man thought, now I'm guaranteed to go to heaven. Because eventually he died, and he wound up at the gates of judgment. And Peter was looking into the book. And when it came his time, Peter said, you're supposed to go to hell. So he said, no, wait a second. I gave a donation to the church. They guaranteed me I'm going to heaven. And he actually was so attached that he pulled out his receipt for $5. So there was a big argument going on, and the line was being backed up for judgment. So God was looking out his window, and he said, what's going on? So he went over to Peter and said, what's going on? He said, well, this man, he claims that he gave a donation to the church for $5, and he says that there's a rule that whoever gives a donation to the church goes to heaven. So God took Peter off to the side and took out his wallet and gave Peter $5 and said, give him back the $5 and tell him to go to hell. So we may think that somehow or another we can reverse the laws of material nature, but they're very stringent. And therefore, if we want to change our consciousness, we have to change our understanding, first of all, of who we actually are and what our business here in this material world. In other words, if there is a God, then God is the owner of everything. And therefore, we should actually utilize God's energies in God's service. So that's the whole aim of the Krishna consciousness movement, simply to convince people that there is a person called God, whether you call him Jehovah or Allah or Krishna, and that person happens to be the owner of everything. And our duty is to find out what we should do with God's energies, what he wants us to do. Basically speaking, Krishna, he wants us to become Krishna conscious and to do those things which will help us become conscious of him. And also at the same time, to utilize our energies to help others, whether our family members or our friends or even unknown people, whoever we meet, to help them also understand that they're eternal souls and that they should find out about their relationship with Krishna also. So of course in this age when everything is very complicated and people don't have the time usually to study these books very carefully, or they don't understand exactly how to utilize their energies in the service of the Supreme. They're not very much familiar with who the Supreme actually is. So in this age, by the mercy of an incarnation of God named Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we have a very easy method of gradually reviving our consciousness of the Supreme, namely by chanting the names of the Supreme. So we're chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So this is a prayer to the Supreme Lord and the Supreme Lord's energy to kindly engage us in their loving service. Because service to God means loving service. God, who has everything, doesn't need our little donations because it's already his energy. He doesn't lose anything if he gives us something, and he doesn't gain anything if we give something back to him. He already owns everything eternally. But what he wants is our love, our appreciation. Because ultimately God is defined as that person who has all beauty, has all knowledge, has all fame, has all strength, has all wealth, and has all renunciation. He's the most attractive person, and he's described very nicely in these books, especially in a book like Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, especially in Bhagavatam, the 10th canto, in the Krishna book. Krishna is described in a very detailed way. We can find out who God is. We can find out what he looks like, who his parents are, where he lives. Unfortunately, he's not on Facebook. And he doesn't have an email address. But you can contact him by email through the Radhe Kala Chandri Mandira email address. You can whatever questions you have, you can send here, and we'll ask Radha Kala Chandri. And everything is described about Krishna, so we want to know about him. It's there. And if we chant Hare Krishna, to actually realize for ourselves personally, in other words, the chanting of Hare Krishna is a personal request to Lord Krishna and his divine energy, Srimati Radharani, to engage us in his service. And as we learn the philosophy, then we'll develop the desire to actually engage in his loving service. So when we chant Hare Krishna, we'll do it with more sincerity, more understanding, more sincerity, that we actually want to engage in his loving service. And that's all that's necessary, is to develop that desire. If we develop desire to engage in Krishna's loving service, then he'll reciprocate with us and he'll actually engage us in his loving service. Of course, we want to do many things, and therefore we don't always get the full result. just like a child, if the child says, I want to eat, to the mother. And the child says, well, I also want to sleep. And I want to go out and play, and I want to go and watch television, and I also want to eat, and I want... So the mother won't know what the child wants. So we say, God, I want to engage in your loving service, but I also need a few donations, you know, and there's a few other things you can do for me. I need health insurance, and I need a new house, and a new television, and there's a few other things on my list, but also I'd like to engage in your loving service. So we're not really clear exactly what we want from Krishna. We want so many things, then Krishna will give us some things, but we won't get his complete loving service. Because material desires and spiritual desires are not compatible. You can't wind up in the east if you are on a train going west. If your desire is to go west, you can't wind up east. So the spiritual world is a place where only one engages in loving service to Krishna, and this is a place where we don't engage in loving service to Krishna. We engage in service to our mind and senses. But fortunately, the Hare Krishna mantra is so powerful, if we chant it regularly, then gradually some of our material conceptions, some of our material aspirations will actually forget about, or will think they're insignificant compared to the illumination and the happiness and satisfaction one can derive from simply chanting Hare Krishna. So we certainly recommend that, and at the same time, to read books like Bhagavad Gita to give us some idea of what spiritual life is like and how to live it in this material world. And so at the time of leaving our body, then it'll be very clear that we'll at least get a better situation in our next lifetime to pursue spiritual life in a more systematic and enthusiastic way, and that there won't be any danger of entering into the lower species of life. Other than that, people have no idea that they're eternal. People have no idea about the laws of karma. They're not educated. They may believe that they have so much knowledge, they know so many things, they know how to look through a microscope and identify 5 million different germs. What they don't realize is that they're going to become one of those germs soon. So what is the value of spending your whole life studying the material nature, and at the end of life you simply wind up one of the species of material nature? Better to spend some time finding out about the spiritual nature so that we can progress and eventually get free from all our material disturbances and find out who we actually are and revive our relationship with the most attractive person, the person and his friends who actually care something about us, care something enough about each one of us that they come personally themselves and teach this philosophy, and then empower their representatives to do the same. So we can also take advantage of this and help other people in a real way understand their spiritual nature and make their human form of life actually successful. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
Hare Krishna. It's said that as we reincarnate, we've lived past lifetimes. Why don't we remember our past lifetimes?
Because our memories are not very good. We can't even remember where we put our keys yesterday. So what to speak of what we were doing in the womb of our mother? So no one's going to deny that they were in the womb of their mother. Maybe some people will, but most people won't bother denying that. But who remembers what they were doing in the womb of their mother? What to speak of 1 year old? Even that we can't remember. So why should we believe that we're going to, why should we think we could remember our past life if we can't remember what went on in this lifetime? There are people who have remembered their past lives, and that's been verified because they remember having a certain identity even when they were very young, 1 or 2 years old, or 3 years old. They remembered having a certain identity, and they believed that they had a certain husband, they lived in a certain place. And when scientific investigators went there, they found out, indeed, there was such a person, and they did have such a family, and they did live in such a place, and they died in this way, and therefore it was all verified. So some people do remember their past lives, but then they forget about it after some time. So again, as I said, practically speaking, our previous existence, even in this lifetime, was our past life, and we can't remember. So our previous existence before we got this body, why should we believe we're going to be able to remember that? Yes.
There is this material body, and there is also the sukshma.
Yes, mind, intelligence, and
exactly. They're both constantly against in terms of their desires. Like physically, one may be present here doing the religious things, but in mind he may be off. So, what takes the precedence in terms of their next nature? What he does in actions.
The subtle body is the... Because just to bring the body here requires some intelligence. Just to bring it here. But we may not have full intelligence. We may not have full power of the mind and senses. But just the endeavor to come here and to try to hear, try to participate, means that there is some endeavor. So that much is taken. Krishna takes that as service. Now it's not completely pure, and therefore we may have to come back again to further develop our intelligence so that the mind becomes more fully engaged, the senses become more fully engaged in Krishna's service. So it's a question of developing our transcendental intelligence, and that may take some time by practice. Suitable practice, Krishna says, and by detachment from the demands of the mind and senses. Is that right? Anything else? Yes.
If any person who chants Hare Krishna feels happy, so are the senses are happy or the soul is happy?
Well, the senses are never happy. The senses are dead. There's no question. If you cut your hand, if you ask your hand, how are you doing today? And they say, oh, I'm really doing great. Wow, I'm excited. No, the hand is always dead. It's the soul that feels everything, that experiences everything. It's only due to, just like you put your hand in a glove into a puppet, you move the puppet around. It's not the puppet's feeling anything. It's because the hand's in the puppet that it's moving. So because the soul's in the body, because the super soul is in the body appears to be alive, but the body is always dead. It doesn't feel anything. Only the soul that feels.
Thank you.
All right, thank you very much. Grandaraj Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande.
His Holiness Prabhupada Swami Maharaj Ki Jai.
Thank you.
I love the promiscuous patriarch.